This is AWLS, podcasts on wilderness medicine from the University of Utah School of Medicine.
Hello, this is Richard Ingebretson from the University of Utah School of Medicine. Thanks for tuning in our AWLS podcast. This is a medical podcast on wilderness medicine. But every now and again, rather than just talking about the medicine, we like to talk about cases that happened so that we can all learn from them. I'm speaking today with a young man, Joseph Fournier, who was in a skiing accident in the mountains east of Salt Lake City. This particular accident required that he be extricated and rescued by a search and rescue team. This makes this accident even more precarious. But the lessons that will be learned from this are great. Joseph, thanks for coming to our podcast today.
Thank you for having me on, Rich. So essentially, this little adventure, if you want to call it that, started off as just a plan between me and my cousin, who is at the University of Utah at the time. And really, it was just going to be a sort of mellow day backcountry skiing up Big Cottonwood Canyon in Utah. So, you know, as any good day of backcountry skiing starts out, we got up super, super early, met at one of the park and rides, carpooled up the canyon to save on parking spaces. So we finally arrived at this campground in Utah, USA, called Spruce's Campground, which was across from the location that we're going to, you know, start our adventure. So after about, 10, 15 minutes kind of getting our gear on, getting ready, beacon checks, and kind of going over a rough draft of the plan, we set off. So the first little thing to note here is, in retrospect, having considered what happened, is we didn't really establish a full game plan of what to do should an accident occur or, you know, an evac scenario. And then the second thing was I was on skis that I'd never, ever skied on before. So I wasn't really super familiar with how they handled. And I've also never used these bindings either. And these boots had, you know, limited mileage on them.
What was the weather like when you went up there?
So the weather was initially, you know, very beautiful, very sunny. But there was a storm that was supposed to roll in around 5 or 6 p.m. that night. So making sure that we got down before then was kind of a necessity. But, you know, when we started off, it looked pretty good. So we started skinning up, you know, regular out-of-shape-ness that happens on ski tours. And really, we just kind of kept moving up until we got to the summit, the area we were going to ski. So once we reached the summit, the weather had moved in a little bit sooner than we had anticipated, and wind started blowing. So we kind of had to take that into account when it came to avalanche conditions or potential avalanche conditions. So we actually looked off to our, you know, skiers left and saw that the open clearing that we were planning on skiing through looked a little bit wind loaded. So we wanted to try to avoid that as much as possible. So we made the decision to navigate and ski in between the trees in hopes that that would, you know, help anchor any sort of slab that there was so we wouldn't get caught in an avalanche. So pretty much as soon as we reached the top of the peak, we had decided to transition immediately and set off downhill as the weather was kind of moving in and it was getting a little bit chilly. So my cousin, my touring partner, decided to start off in front of me and then I would bring up the rear. So she made it down several turns and the plan was to kind of leapfrog through the trees and just, you know, kind of catch up with each other every now and again. So I was bringing up the rear and I had set off and I made about two good turns and I decided to thread the needle between two trees and I really miscalculated. So I ended up hitting my left leg on the left tree and in an instant I just, you know, crumpled. I had honestly no recollection of, you know, what even really happened during that period of time. I just remember lying in the snow being in a pretty good amount of pain with blood coming from somewhere. So the first thing that I really did was having kind of been around family with medical histories or, you know, nurses and so on. I immediately wiggled my toes to see if, you know, my leg was paralyzed or not, because I was having a bit of a hard time moving it. Having established that I was not paralyzed, I could wiggle and feel everything. I then decided to try to kind of like gently kind of feel out the area that hurt the most and try to see if there was any sort of compound fracture or any sort of, you know, immediate bleeding that was going to happen. There wasn't. That was the good news. And then I quickly just felt around and felt my chin. You know, that was the source of the bleeding. There was a laceration right there on my chin. And I basically stayed in the snow for about a good 5 minutes, just kind of screaming out in pain. And then I called down to my touring partner and kind of explained the situation. And we waited.
Let me ask you, how did you call down to her?
We didn't have radios, which was the big regret in hindsight. I just basically had to yell down to her through kind of the yelping in pain to kind of explain that, you know, I was alive and nothing was like seriously, seriously bad. And just kind of asked for her to try to see if she can make her way back up to me. After about 5 minutes, she had made her way back up to me. And just as we were trying to, you know, formulate a plan of like, what's the next move and, you know, what do we do next? Three ski tours, or like a party of three, actually came up and met us there. These people were total strangers, but they absolutely jumped into action as soon as they kind of assessed the situation. Before we even had a chance to use our phones to call for help, one of the ski tours went up to the summit to find better service to make that call. And then two of them stayed down with us and basically dug out a snow pit for me and kind of started to try to, you know, stabilize me, get me in better, you know, better conditions. So one of the first things that they did was, you know, went through the whole checklist of asking my name, making sure I was conscious, making sure I didn't hit my head, and so on and so forth. And then after they had established that there wasn't anything super critical at that very moment, they went to work basically digging out a snow pit, just a more level platform for me to rest on. And then we kind of stayed there for, I believe the accident occurred at around 11:30 a.m. By the time I was actually lifted out, it was more closer to 3 o'clock.
And you were in pain the whole time. Did you do anything to try and manage the pain?
Not really. I just thought about getting off the mountain was pretty much the only thing that I could do. Unfortunately, none of us really had any sort of pain medication. So the most I could do was really just brace my injured left leg.
How did you know that you there was blood? You felt it or you saw it? Did you try to stop it?
The reason I knew that there was blood was basically at the site of the accident, there was kind of blood in the snow. And I took some time to kind of examine everywhere that I could examine. And the main culprit was essentially a laceration underneath my chin. Beyond that, we couldn't find any other obvious sites of bleeding. And honestly, by the time the party of three reached us, the bleeding had pretty much slowed down to a minimal. So we decided that it didn't really require any immediate care at the time. So essentially for several hours, or about like 2 to 3 hours, I was just kind of on the snow pit, kind of bracing my leg, basically chatting with the two other people who were there. In that period of time, I started to definitely start to get shivers, starting to, I guess, exhibit signs of hypothermia. From that point on, we'd made the decision to try to, you know, insulate me as much as possible from conduction and convection. So the two ways that we did that was I had a bivy sack in my pack, and another one of the ski tours had a bivy sack. So between the two of us, we used two bivy sacks. And then the real thing that helped was my cousin and then the two other people actually gave up their puffy jackets and used that to, you know, to place it underneath me to prevent, you know, conduction of my body heat from escaping, which was, you know, truly remarkable. And then here was kind of another little mistake in retrospect, was that day I made the very conscious choice not to bring an emergency puffy, which was a decision that I just made in haste because I didn't think I would need it that day. And lo and behold, I did end up needing it. From there on, there was, you know, some communication with the search and rescue team. So we were hearing that the Solitude Ski Patrol had been actually dispatched and were on snowmobiles and trying to make their way up to us. And then we got word that two helicopters were dispatched. Probably about a good hour and 20 minutes into this, we started hearing helicopters. Then we noticed two helicopters in particular, the Life Flight helicopter and a Utah Department of Public Safety helicopter, were, you know, circling our area. So initially the Life Flight helicopter tried to land about two times with skids on the top of the mountain, but conditions didn't allow for it. So after about two passes of that, I guess the Department of Public Safety helicopter decided to winch me out of there. From that point on, they hovered over us for a good amount, just trying to gain their bearings. And they lowered down a rescuer with a sort of sling down to me. They got me all hooked up, and then they winched me up to kind of right outside the door of the helicopter. And then they basically just flew over to one of the local ski resorts in Utah called Solitude. And they basically just lowered me down in that kind of sling into a clearing, in which I was promptly met by one of the helicopter pilots from the Life Flight helicopter that landed. And they basically, you know, asked if I needed a lift. I decided to decline in lieu of an ambulance, which brought me all the way down the canyon and into a hospital.
How much of that decision to go to avoid the second helicopter and take an ambulance was based on pain or finances, or either one?
Honestly, I would say finances played probably the biggest role. And then the second role was I really just did not feel like I needed it. During this whole time, I mean, yes, I was in pretty immense pain with my leg. Most of that pain actually came stemming from when I was outside the helicopter dangling. I couldn't really adequately brace my left leg, so it was just, you know, subject to wind forces. But as soon as it was braced, honestly, most of the pain kind of went away. Honestly, the biggest consideration that, or biggest discomfort that I had at the time was I really had to use the restroom. So that was like pretty much my only coherent thought for a lot of it, was just making it back down for that. And then I just decided, you know, I wasn't critical. I wasn't in, aside from like, there wasn't any medical reason for me to have my process expedited using a helicopter. So, yeah, that was pretty much mostly the story.
Well, when we hear these stories of injury in the backcountry, when a good day suddenly turns into a bad day, our minds always go back and say, well, what could, you know, we have done or I have done to prevent that? And was this preventable? And if it was preventable, what could you have done? And if you could do other things differently, and just sort of summarize that for us.
Yeah, so I'm a strong believer in trying to take away lessons from every single life experience, if applicable. And the number one lesson I took away from this incident was preparedness. Like Rich said, you know, any day in the backcountry can turn bad pretty quickly. And it's important that you take the necessary precautions within reason to try to mitigate any kind of negative circumstances that you find yourself in. So the first thing that I would probably do was, before I set out, just make a more concrete plan of the what ifs. If something happens, what do we do then? Kind of work through plan A, plan B, and plan C. That would be the first thing that I would do. The second thing is gear preparedness. Gear such as an emergency bivy can really make a very big difference, as was in my case. This emergency bivy is really quite inexpensive. You can generally find them pretty easily. And they're really just like an emergency space blanket that just is kind of forms a cocoon. The second thing I would bring is I would bring my Oh Crap Puffy that I usually bring with me on many backcountry trips, but for whatever reason, this time I didn't. Beyond that, the tent essentials are a necessity, and some of the tent essentials really saved my life that day. And even going further, if you're really worried about any sort of breaks or sprains of a mobile splint can really just help ease that process, or the ability to splint something if needed. Beyond that, wearing a helmet, I think, is extremely paramount, especially when you're dealing with sports that involve high levels of forces, i.e. gravity, you know, in skiing or climbing. Although I did not hit my head, had I, absolutely a helmet would have been a necessity. And then another thing that I, upon retrospection, was basically having an ability to communicate with the outside world. So although our phones were charged to about 70%, that in my kind of purview was probably not enough. Charging them to 100% or carrying a Garmin inReach or some other sort of like personal locator beacon probably could be good going forward.
What kind of helmet did you have on? Was it worthy of what you were doing?
No, it was not. It was actually a climbing helmet. And the reason why I chose to wear this helmet was over my, you know, on-piece skiing helmet was just because of its low weight. I have since actually purchased a relatively low weight helmet that is certified for both alpinism, you know, rockfall and other things like that. And then also the ski collisions that you can find yourself in as well. Beyond any sort of careful planning in the future, I think it's very important to try to, you know, use any sort of incident like this to make sure that you're resilient and prepared for the future. So not long after I, you know, was recovered and was back up and walking again, I was skiing. And honestly, although this was a very stressful experience, to say the least, I'm glad that I had this experience because I'm sure that it allowed me to really kind of dig in and do my research and be better prepared for future endeavors and future adventures in the future. With that being said, I really wanted to take the time to acknowledge and deeply thank the crews involved in my rescue, such as the Sheriff's Department, Search and Rescue, and the Saltus Ski Patrol, as well as my cousin and the three ski tours who came up and really helped me and saved my life that day. In addition, I'd really like to thank friends and family, such as Ian and my father, for really making my recovery seamless and honestly very, very pleasant overall.
That's a nice tribute to the people who rescued you and that everything that they could to get you off the mountain safely and to recover. Thanks for saying that. What was your recovery?
My recovery was after I was diagnosed with a tibial plateau fracture and underwent surgery in which, fixations were implanted to make sure that things wouldn't deteriorate. After I had recovered, I pretty much spent most of my recovery kind of working, and then soon after I was up and back skating again and skiing again within about 3 months after the incident occurred.
Do you have post-traumatic stress?
Probably not. There was one incident in which I was skiing a glacier up in Utah in which I definitely started to kind of take the easier way down the mountain just because I was a bit afraid of a reoccurrence. But beyond that, I've kind of recovered mentally.
So given the safer helmet and all the bivy sack and the puffy things you're going to take, I'll just ask this as we end. Would you ski between those trees again?
Absolutely. 100% I would. Yeah, it was a pretty fun line.
We like to hear the stories of success of rescue where people have had injury and to take it from the injured person's perspective. And we're grateful, Joseph, that you would take the time to talk about the injury which you suffered. This ends the podcast on this young man who hit a tree while skiing and the recovery and the rescue that he underwent. And as always, we say thank you for listening.